You're listening to 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine. The opinions expressed on this program do not reflect the views of KUCI or the University of California at Irvine.
Good morning, and welcome to Talking Animals. It's 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I've already gotten a number of questions here at the show and at the station and elsewhere. What is Talking Animals? What's it all about? Well, what better time or place to answer that very question? So it's a weekly show really designed to address an unlimited array of animal-related issues in a freewheeling format that emphasizes interviews with experts. We'll always have at least one interview each week, whether that's a local veterinarian answering questions about your pets to national and international figures who are pivotal in the fields of animal organization. And also, people involved with sanctuaries, animal causes of various kinds as well. But we're also determined to not get overly clinical, serious, or downright dull by really trying to maintain an upbeat, entertaining approach that celebrates the world of animals through music, comedy, and other elements. Or put it another way, we're here to educate and to entertain, as long as it's always animal-related. So, for example, over the course of today's show, we'll offer a snippet of animal-oriented comedy and various musical interludes, including our ongoing Name That Animal Tune contest, in which you can win prizes or services for correctly identifying the song. Meanwhile, we're pleased that in a few minutes, here on Talking Animals, we'll be featuring an interview with today's guest, Ralph Helfer, a legendary figure in the animal world who pioneered fundamental changes in animal training back in the 60s and has gone on to also become an author, filmmaker, teacher, lecturer, and African safari leader. We'll go further into Ralph Helfer in a few minutes, but first on Talking Animals, we're going to take our weekly look at items of interest in animal news. And I want to remind find you the phone number to join us on the show with your own comments and questions about animals, not only this week's animal news items, but also the care and feeding of pets or any other animal issues on a local, national, or international level. Whatever animal issues you'd like to discuss, we absolutely want to hear from you. We're wide open. Phone number is 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. Please feel free to call us at any point in the show. We may not be able to answer right away, but we do want to hear from you, so please bear with us. So turning now to interesting or important developments recently in animal news, there are sort of local, regional, national, or actually international stories of note that have appeared recently in the news and the media, and I'd like to get your comments on. Also, if there are ever stories you'd like to bring to our attention, of course, you can call them in, but please feel free to email us news items of interest at talkinganimals@aol.com. We'd also love to encourage you to email us with comments about the show, suggestions of future guests, ideas about animal songs, comedy bits, questions that you might have or you'd like us to get answered either by a vet or another animal expert, and any other animal topic that's on your mind. That email again is talkinganimals@aol.com. And over time, eventually, there will be a Talking Animals website with all kinds of wonderful and informative sections. Meanwhile, let's talk turkey, all right, as it were. Here are some animal stories that have been in the news lately, in the last, actually 2 or 3 days. Most of these actually appeared in yesterday's either LA Times, New York Times, or Associated Press. I think one of them may be a little older than that, but let's dive in, shall we? So I think there's nothing's probably more notable or timely in the sort of animal-related world than the whole monkeypox issue. So actually, there was a story yesterday that said one prairie dog infected with monkeypox before health officials identified the virus may have been responsible for spreading the disease to half of the human cases in Wisconsin, state officials said yesterday, or actually Saturday, sorry. A lot of people got exposed over time, said Robert Ellenfeld, acting state veterinarian. That exposure would have happened before we knew what we were dealing with. State epidemiologist, epidemiologist. Oh, that's better. Anyways, Jeff Davis said Friday that the prairie dog had been linked to 3 confirmed human cases, 6 probable cases, 9 suspected cases, and a case of monkeypox in a rabbit, which infected one of the humans. Clearly, he says, a super spreader if ever there was one. And by Friday, officials had confirmed 12 human cases of the disease, 4 each in Wisconsin, Indiana, and Illinois. Also, 71 possible cases have been reported, 22 in Indiana, 30 in Wisconsin, 15 in Illinois, 2 in Ohio, and 1 each in Arizona and Kentucky. No one has died, but at least 14 patients with symptoms have been hospitalized, including a child with encephalitis or brain inflammation, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. So I guess the I'd love to get your thoughts on that. What if anything could have been done to avoid or at least contain the monkeypox problem? Is it just a fluke, or should laws sort of governing the selling and distribution of animals like prairie dogs be changed, tightened up? So again, 949-824-5824 on that one. Also, this is a story that actually ran last month sometime, but important enough that I thought we should revisit it. This was in the LA Times at that time, and headline: seas being stripped of big fish. Study finds, it says, industrial fishing fleets have systematically stripped 90% of the giant tuna, swordfish, marlin, and other big fish from the world's oceans, according to a new study that suggests the virtual collapse of these stocks, such as happened to the cod off New England, is a distinct possibility. Fishing fleets are competing for the remnants, about 10% of the biggest fish in the ocean, concludes a 10-year research project reported in a recent issue of the science journal Nature. Fishermen used to go out and catch these phenomenally big fish, as Ransom A. Myers, a fisheries biologist at Dalhousie University in Halifax, Canada, but they cannot find them anymore. They're not there. We ate them. If the current level of overfishing continues, the new study suggests, fish populations will soon become too small to be sustainable, causing fisheries to disappear. That, in turn, would have a serious impact on human food supplies and cause long-term damage to the ocean environment. We knew that current fishing practices will lead to the collapse of fisheries and eventually extinction of various species, said Myers. But by any measure, there are way too many hooks in the water. Myers' study with Dalhousie University colleague Boris Worm on a fishing study? Jeez, okay. Is the third in a series of recent scientific papers that challenge the notion that the oceans are so resilient that they can provide an inexhaustible supply of fish to feed the world. So again, love to get your thoughts on that. What can or should be done? Should there be some sort of limit set? How would people go about that? Is it too late, really, based on what this study is reporting and other things? 949-824-5824-949-UCI-KUCI. On a more international level, this appeared in the Associated Press over the weekend. Basically, Dateline is Flaxafloy Bay, Iceland. Sort of a little slightly poetic opening, which I'll read you. Only the gentle hum of the engines and the whistling North Atlantic would wind break the silence aboard the Elding One as several dozen pairs of eyes eagerly scan the waters around the whaleboat. The hunters wait patiently, searching out their prey while snug in warm bodysuits to stave off the chill whipping off the sea. Then comes a loud cry from guide Einar Orn Einarsson, positioned on a watchtower. Minke whale at 11 o'clock, he shouts. The alert prompts a stampede to the bow, followed by jostling for position. But these whale hunters are armed with cameras, not harpoons. They represent the many Icelanders see as a crossroads for their island nation. Should they focus on tourism-related aspects of the environment, or join Japan and Norway in pushing to resume traditional hunts over strong international sentiment for protecting the huge animals? A move that has outraged conservationist groups. Iceland's government has submitted a proposal to the International Whaling Commission to resume limited hunting of northern minkes and endangered fin and sea whales. The government says its proposed program of scientific research whaling is necessary to gauge the impact of whale herds on fisheries, stocks, and provide data on the mammals' migration patterns and population trends. So I guess, in this regard, comments on this story generally, but also just whaling, the idea of whaling in 2003, in Iceland, as this case, obviously is addressing, but also in Japan, Norway, just your views on that overall, pro-con, and what you think. Also, closer to home, not exactly local, but this is a Colorado-based story. Pushing the other red meat, it's headlined. At 54, rancher Bob Hossie has always been a meat and potatoes kind of guy. For the last few years, the meat has been yak. Three or four times a week, Hossie and his family break bread over prime cuts from the Tibetan beast of burden. They eat it for lunch and dinner. They use it in spaghetti sauce. They grind it up and pop it on hamburger buns. Hossie loves to grill a good yak filet mignon, topping it with a dollop of béarnaise sauce or a light apricot glaze that enhances the meat's natural yakiness. Yak has a more delicate taste than beef, Hossie said, as he tended a couple of yak steaks over his backyard barbecue. It's sweeter. It's less greasy. I don't know if I could ever go back to beef. Hossie, who left battery manufacturing to become a rancher, wants nothing more than for lots of other people to crave a nice piece of low-cholesterol, high-protein yak. As president of the International Yak Association, he's one of the couple of dozen ranchers who dream of making yak the other red meat, a feat characterized as practically impossible by some marketing experts. I think it's hopeless, said David Perzglow, the Washington, D.C. consultant who analyzes food trends for major corporations. Buffalo and ostrich didn't fill the nation's plates as their promoters had hoped, he said, and neither will yak. People don't go to restaurants to experiment. They go to have a good time, said Perzglow, who predicts that white tea, but not yak, will be the hot new thing among trendsetters in the next 3 years. So let's yak about yak. What do you think? Is yak going to be soon appearing on your plate? And are you willing to give it a shot? Why not, huh? And we're going to finish up here with a couple elephant-related stories. This appeared recently in the New York Times by way of the Oakland Tribune, but sort of be covered locally and I think more broadly even prior to that. Starts up at a game reserve in Swaziland. 11 orphaned elephants have been ready for a journey to two zoos in the United States. The move occurs. It will be the first in more than a decade allowed under an international agreement involving African elephants from the wild. Officials at the two zoos that want the elephants, the San Diego Wild Animal Park and the Lowry Park Zoo in Tampa, Florida, say that importing them will prevent them from being killed and help with the management and conservation of the elephants, a threatened species. But animal and elephant welfare groups are trying to block the importation. They say the move is unnecessary and that a better home can be found for the animals in Africa rather than placing them in zoos. Quote, we believe this is setting a very dangerous precedent for trade of an endangered species for exhibition and entertainment purposes, and that it is going to add a further decline of the species in the wild, Catherine Meyer, a lawyer representing the groups opposed to the move. African elephants are listed as threatened under the Endangered Species Act. The Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species, or CITES, lists them as a, quote, species deserving the highest trade restriction because they are threatened with extinction in the wild. Over the past 6 years, CITES has eased trade restrictions on elephants, changing their status in many parts of southern Africa. Swaziland has remained among the African countries that say elephants may not be traded for commercial purposes. Swaziland, a small kingdom bordered by South Africa and Mozambique, has about 42 elephants, most of them brought to the country from the Kruger National Park in South Africa. Despite the small number, the space in national reserves and parks is limited, and wildlife authorities say they may have to kill some elephants to reduce their numbers. So, I'd like to get your view on just the specific issue, the idea of importing elephants or other animals to zoos and Wild Animal Park, in this case, locally. And we're also going to get our guest, Ralph Helfer, to share some of his interesting views on that, as I recall. And then lastly, much more local elephant-related story. I'm sure you probably heard or read about the Los Angeles Zoo and their plans to send an African elephant, Ruby, to the Knoxville Zoo in Tennessee, breaking up kind of a long-time bond, 16-year bond, actually, with another female elephant, an Asian elephant named Gita there. And as soon as this news broke, the zoo actually, I think a lot of people would consider to be under cover of the night, went ahead and sent Ruby to the Knoxville Zoo before the case was even heard or resolved legally. So, you know, and then there's subsequently been protests and all kinds of noise made about this, and it's still going on as a legal thing. But just the idea of sending a, you know, splitting up a pair of elephants that have been together for 16 years, or a pair of animals at all, and Ruby at this point is too old to mate, and yet one of the reasons given apparently was that it was going to be serving as a model for the other younger elephants in the Knoxville Zoo for mating and looking after their young. So we'll get some input from Ralph Health on that as well, but love to get yours. You know, for what it's worth, in the interest of full disclosure, I have a particular interest in and soft spot for elephants, and not necessarily a huge supporter of zoos or elephants being held in captivity under any circumstance. But this story, really most of these, but this one in particular, has really aroused strong feelings on both sides, as animal issues often do. So I look forward to taking some calls on this story and hearing what you think. It's 949-824-5824, 949-UCI. KUCI. And before we move on to something of a lighter animal note, I also want to just briefly tell you about if you're looking to do a good deed, a little volunteer public service related to animals, something I did a few days ago and hope to get back to. You may have heard or read about this fairly dreadful situation in Colton, which is near San Bernardino, sort of beyond Ontario, at least from here, where there was a tiger sanctuary, and things were in such disrepair, both in terms of the facility and the care of the animals, that a lot of the animals were ill, dying, and the man who was running the facility also had a bunch of animals at his house, and when they raided there, they found all kinds of tiger frozen cubs and corpses, just awful, awful situation. But anyway, so obviously he's up against a string of legal charges. But until that gets resolved, they have appointed someone to look after the facility and all the tigers, and there's quite a number of other animals there as well. So all this work is really being done by volunteers, and it's not fun. You know, when I went, I shoveled so many different kinds of poop from they have pigs and goats and a camel and ostriches and dogs and other stuff, and then they have a lot of cats, some lions, some bobcats and other things, and then 30, 40 probably easily tigers. And but looking after them is really kind of cool, and especially on these hotter days, many of them love water, and you get to hose them down and see them jumping in and out of their pens and just, look after them, clean them, help them. And so it's a pretty neat thing to do. So if you have any interest in getting involved with that, give me a call as well, or again, email us at talkinganimals@aol.com. So while we are awaiting the calls to pour in, he said with completely unjustified optimism, I thought we'd step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner with a nice animal-oriented stand-up piece from Ellen DeGeneres on 88.9 KUCI.
I personally, I like cats more than dogs. How many people, by round of applause, like cats more than dogs? Me too. How many people like dogs more than cats? Me too. I have a cat that is in heat right now. You ever had a cat in heat? They just change on you. She's my kitten, my adorable little pet that now is a hooker. She's wearing makeup. I went into the bathroom the other night. She's putting on mascara. Tonight, won't be just any. La la. Mm-hmm. She didn't know the whole song. Mm-hmm. She just knew some of the words. Mm-hmm. She's an indoor cat, but male cats know she's in there somehow. They're just all around the house, and somehow she's sneaking out because the other morning I found a stamp on her paw. I wouldn't have noticed. I just bought this new black light, and she passed right under it. Hey, what is that? So these male cats, they are sneaky. They're trying to get in for... They're just... The other day, one of them disguised himself as a UPS man. At the truck, the packages, everything. I said, I'm not falling for that, you know. The suit was just hanging off of him, just... Little name tag said Fluffy. Oh, right. I will not sign here, Scoot. Driving off all mad in that big truck. Stripping the gears. They don't know how to drive. Cats. Came back the next day as a cable repairman. Same outfit. Little butt crack hanging out this time. That's... So he fooled me. I let him in. I caught on. But he got Nickelodeon for free. He hooked that up somehow. So get to see all the old shows. Boy, when cats mate, they just mate. They don't care where they are, what time it is, how loud they are, who they're with. Wouldn't that be great? That is. But then you compare it to, like, I was watching the Discovery Channel, and penguins are monogamous for life. Penguins mate for life, which doesn't really surprise me that much. They all look exactly alike. It's not like they're going to meet a better-looking penguin someday. Even if they are cheating, how do you know? I think that's me he's with. Sandra, doesn't that look like me?
That's Ellen DeGeneres on KUCI. It's Talking Animals. And that was from her Taste This album, her whimsical take on Cats and Heat, and a little bonus bit on penguin dating. Wonderful stuff from the earlier days of her stand-up career. But meanwhile, she's been honing a whole new act in preparation for taping a new HBO special. She's a key voice in the new animated hit film Finding Nemo. More animal action. And just around the corner, she's about to launch her new national talk show. So, and she's also a longtime supporter of animal causes. So who knows, maybe she'll be a future guest on Talking Animals. But in lieu of taking any calls, because we so far don't have any, we're going to step right into our interview that I had mentioned with our guest, Ralph Helfer. And I sort of briefly alluded to his achievements, but let me hit a few more. Back in the 60s, he helped pioneer affection training, which we'll hear a good deal about here, and totally revolutionized the TV and film business when it came to animals, and has been involved with other endeavors animal-related over the years. He's also an author, a filmmaker, lecturer, teacher, and has written one of the books he's written, MODOK, The True Story of the Greatest Elephant That Ever Lived, is it being a... Well, he'll talk about that, but looks like it's going to be made into a film, and just finished another book, and he lives most of the year now in Africa, where he leads safaris. And in fact, he left Saturday for another round of safaris, and he wasn't going to be back till October. So he was kind enough to let me interview him Friday night, because I did want to sort of get him before he left, and also thought he'd be a fitting guest to kick off Talking Animals with. So let's hear that now with Ralph Helfer. Well, maybe not. Hold on. Don't go away. Okay, let's welcome Ralph Helfer. Hi, Ralph. How are you?
Well, I'm real good, Duncan.
Good. I'm glad you were able to make the time for us. I know you're just about to scoot off to Africa for a few safaris.
I have four safaris lined up. They're a little different than usual. These are going to be based on seeing the mountain gorilla up in the Bindu impenetrable forest in Uganda.
Oh, wow.
I've waited a bit of time because, as you know, they had a bit of a problem over there, and that was a couple of years ago, and So I thought I'd wait until, you know, I felt that it was reasonably safe. And so I'm looking forward to taking four groups in the next 4 months, actually.
Wow. And how long a trip is each trip, and how does that work?
Well, what it is, some of the people, seeing they're going halfway around the world, like to see more than just the gorillas. So you're looking at about 4 weeks on some of them.
Wow.
Which will take in Tanzania, and of course we'll do the Ngorongoro crater, we'll do the Serengeti, the Oldupai Gorge, and things like that. And then when we, for those that want to, we'll go into Kenya, and that has so many wonderful things to visit, such as, of course, Mount Kenya, the Masai Mara, Mombasa, and I could go on and on.
Wow.
One of our favorites is a camel safari, what they call Sabuk, camel safari up in Rumuruti. And we spend 3 days, 4 nights on a camel trek and camp out down by the river, down by the Wassenaro. And there you're walking where the animals are rather than riding in a vehicle, and it's very exciting.
That sounds fantastic. Wow. Well, those people are very, very lucky to be going on these trips with you. Ralph, just for some of our listeners who might not be, I gave a little bit of an intro here, but as familiar with some of your other things apart from and prior to leading safaris, maybe you could tell us a little bit about your history, including obviously your pioneering work with Affection Training.
Well, I basically started as a stuntman, wrestling lions, tigers, what have you, and learning the hard way, because in those days, the type of training that was used was basically called fear training. So when you did take on one of these exotic animals, they were doing it, well, let's just say, not with any love in their heart.
Yeah.
And so we would end up with a few bites and scratches here and there. And I didn't understand. I thought I was brought up that the lion lives with the lamb, you know, that all of the animals, if they didn't, they should get along with each other.
Sure.
But I found out the hard way, and I listened to other people around me that felt that fear training was the only way to work with animals, and I disagreed with that. I put together my own program. I did a stunt many years ago wrestling. I was in an arena working a full-grown African lion.
Wow.
Which I did not know. I did it as a favor. It belonged to another man. I was young, Duncan, and I shouldn't have done it. But I got in the arena and was working with this African lion on a pedestal. And in the middle of the scene, he attacked me and sunk
wow.
a few holes into my wrist and clawed me pretty good. And that's when a big turnaround, when I said, no more. You know, I don't understand it. There's something wrong. I love animals. And I wasn't prepared to do anything negative or any fear training. But it was then that Affection Training came into my mind.
Sure.
And I developed a program based on four words, actually: love, patience, understanding, and respect. And I added to that that through an entire training of an animal, I would never use any physical abuse. It took 2 years to really test it by bringing in some very young animals, lions, tigers, leopards, what have you. And I became the maternal, paternal parent to each animal and brought them up on an emotional basis so that they were brought up with love and not fear. So, you know, bottom line, we revolutionized the motion picture and television industry by having safe animals.
So it sounds like the key point there, though, Ralph, was that once you developed this concept, you obviously couldn't really introduce that, or probably very effectively, to an animal that had already been through years of the fear training. Your idea was, like, if we start with a baby or a young animal, treat them that way, then we'll have animals that are going to be safe, feel loved and nurtured, and get the same behaviors that you're trying to achieve.
Well, you're absolutely right, Duncan.
Yeah.
It works very well, of course, on young stock that you can bring up. It only worked about 50% on larger animals that were maybe a year or 2 years old, but it was best to start fresh. What did happen is that we rose to the top. We became the world's largest wild animal rental company. We had 1,800 animals, 2,000 acres of property. We did 3,000 or 4,000 animal productions in 27 years.
Wow.
And we worked with everybody from Marilyn Monroe and Elvis Presley and Burt Lancaster and on and on and on, all the great movie stars of that era.
Sure.
We also did all of the Tarzan, not Johnny Weissmuller, he was before my time, although I did get to meet him.
Okay.
But all the Tarzans after Johnny, we did all of their animal work. And what was interesting is we did, fortunately or unfortunately, put our competitors out of business because the insurance companies told the studios to work with us because of the safety factor.
Right. Yeah. Oh, I'm sure that must have made a huge difference. And like you say, I mean, if others were doing it the old way and therefore the unsafe way, I can't imagine why they would insure those productions when they had your productions and your animals that they could do.
Exactly. And yeah. Those years we did Doctari, which we did 4 years. Prime time on television, and we did Gentle Ben, which was the boy and the bear.
Sure.
And that was prime time for 2 years, and Cowboy in Africa. We did Greatest Show on Earth, and on and on, many, many hundreds of, we did commercials. We did the Enco Tiger. We did the Dreyfus Lion.
Yeah.
The Hartford Elk. So many, many different commercials. So we're very proud of giving that to the public, and they could see animals, you know, in a different view than,
sure.
You know, than always in an arena with a whip, gun, and chair.
Absolutely. And then I guess just to, because there's so many areas of your background that I want to get to in a relatively short time, so forgive me if I kind of skip ahead a little bit, but then it seemed like after a time, and a good number of years, as you pointed out, you sort of left that whole world behind, if I understand it correctly.
Well, I did. From that, of course, I went into producing some directing of our own shows. But we then purchased Marine World up in San Francisco. My company was Africa USA. So, of course, we combined the two and called it Marine World Africa USA. And before we went in up there, they did only marine animals. But what I did through affection training is introduced exotic animals, be it lion, tigers, what have you, with the marine animals, dolphins, sea lions,
mm-hmm.
and the park excelled. We really moved ahead and were very successful. And from there, we purchased the Japanese Deer Park, which was down here in Buena Park in Southern California.
Sure.
And we called that the Enchanted Village. And there, we did everything there. The public was allowed to, if you will, wrestle a bear. They could. We did all kinds of things that were, in today's world, they would say is a big no-no.
Sure.
But everything was done with love and affection, and it worked very well.
That's great. And then, again, just trying to hit at least some of your career highlights. You know, among the other things that you've done is, of course, work as a, lecturer, teacher, and I don't know if you want to say much about that, but certainly I'd love to get into your work as an author, including MODOK. And
well, yes. Let me just pick that up a moment. I could say we did win 26 Patsy Awards, which were the same as the Oscar, only of course for animals. I became a writer. And I felt I had a lot to say in the world of animals, man-animal relationships, and how to work with the exotics, and even if we should. We had a couple of animals, at least in my lifetime, that were very, very close to me, and one was MODOK, which was a wonderful Indian elephant, and we had her for over 20 years, and I did a book on her. It took four years a couple of those years just for research. And she was one of the largest elephants around. And the story, Duncan, you have to read the book.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And just to back up for one sec, Ralph, when you said you had MODOK for that many years, where was MODOK that where you knew her?
Well, MODOK was with the major circus at the time.
Okay.
Long before I knew her.
Okay.
And a gentleman who had too much liquor one night, and she was, by the way, the star attraction. She was called the Golden Elephant.
Wow.
And she did the star work in the circus. But this one man went in and put out her eye. It was a very sad moment, and the circus felt that they didn't want an elephant with one eye. So they sold her away from a trainer who had grown up with her, and in fact he and the elephant were born on the same day. So his name was Bram, and so Bram and MODOK lived their whole life, went into the circus world, and then after the accident, the circus sold the elephant out from under the trainer, and that trainer went for years and years and years trying to find her.
Mm.
We, meanwhile, had found her on our own and brought her to my ranch here in California, and then, ironically, the trainer found us and therefore
Oh, wow.
Found MODOK again. So it was a very sad but wonderful reunion.
Sure.
And they spent their lives together till the end.
And so that was really the basis of your book, MODOK, the true story of the greatest elephant that ever lived.
Well, it is. And
yeah.
There's so much to the story. We've already signed with a company over at the studios to do a major film of MODOK. And it will encompass 72 years. That MODOK lived and
Wow.
was with this one man.
Any sort of approximate timetable as to when that film might be produced?
Well, we're looking early this coming spring. Early spring, we should be in production.
Great.
And so we're looking forward to that. And it's like a tribute to a wonderful animal.
Sure. And then I if I'm not mistaken, you're sort of in the midst of another book.
The other love of my life, animal love of my life, was Zamba, which I had for 18 years. And he was a full-grown, he was an African lion, came to weigh over 500 pounds, quite large.
Wow.
Got him when he was a cub, and he lived with me, literally. I mean, slept in my bed, drove in with the station wagon, traveled around the country and the world. But he was the essence of affection training.
Sure.
He was the one lion that would allow children to ride on his back or comb his mane.
Wow.
We did a movie called The Lion with Bill Holden and Trevor Howard a number of years ago in Africa.
Sure.
And Zamba was the star because he could work with Pamela Franklin, who was the actress. And that really started him out on his career when they saw how you could work with this lion safely. It was very important to the industry.
Absolutely. No, again, back to the idea of insurance and just general safety to have a lion that
allowed to do that. But there's so many rules and regulations that prohibit that it restricts them.
Sure.
And I must say that most of the zoos really they don't understand that philosophy, and they are of the philosophy of hands-off,
mm-hmm.
That you shouldn't touch exotic animals, which I think to me is a bit ridiculous. They don't want to humanize the animal. These animals that are in a zoo, 24/7, they are walked and stalked by their enemy, humans.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, if we don't believe that, just try to step in one of their cages.
Sure.
Or even in the moat. So,
animals
can be raised, and I don't want to confuse the issue.
Sure.
But animals can be raised in such a way where they can respect and love humans, and therefore breed a lot faster than fear-trained animals that are in captivity in a zoo.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like you think it's sort of folly then on the zoo's part to
have them in captivity, have them in that circumstance, and yet say, hey, you know, they're not, they're really not, you know, able or open to human contact because they're wild animals. It sounds like your view is that they're sort of trying to have it both ways.
Well, yeah, I mean, when I had my large company, we were doing better breeding with our animals than the zoos were.
Mm-hmm.
And that was because we touched and cared and petted and hugged and
sure.
And were there when births took place. And but you go to a zoo now and they say no, you know you can't do that.
Yeah.
And so I understand that zoos are down. I think 10. The last I heard, there was 55 in the United States, and originally there were 65. And I say that, I mean, some zoos are wonderful, and they mm-hmm. do a good job, and they're beautiful. The problem is that the zoo is for the people, the beautiful lawns, the nice sidewalks, you know, and it should be for the animals.
Sure.
They spend, their budget is to make it presentable for people. And so, you know, you know, that's a different world, and I kind of stay away from it. I have a lot of good friends in the zoo business.
Sure.
But it's very hard to convince them that there really is another way.
And with that in mind, I don't know how much you have had a chance just with all your traveling to be, you know, familiar with this story, but it's just the talk of the zoo and sort of handling things just couldn't help but make me ask about the recent story at the L.A. Zoo with the two elephants that had been together for 16 years, and they wanted to ship one of them off to a zoo in Knoxville, Tennessee. You know, any particular thoughts on that, or if you had a chance to be familiar with that story? Or?
Well, Duncan, as you know, I lived most of my life in Africa, so mm-hmm. I'm not totally aware of that particular situation.
Yeah.
But I can add to it by one thing, and that is that two animals that live together for 16 years that have a fond affection that have not hurt each other, my goodness, leave them be.
Sure.
It sounds more like a political move, maybe a financial move,
mm-hmm.
But to separate them, I have no idea as to why they would do such a thing.
Yeah, yeah, just it seems like it can't be good for the animals in question, and just the story about it in terms of actually the one they were moving, I think the idea was that while that elephant was no longer of age to breed, they thought it would be a good model for the elephants, the other elephants in the zoo in Tennessee that they were moving it to, which I thought, you know, I'm not even sure I get that, not counting the fact of just splitting up that pair that's been together for 16 years to begin with. So, and again, I guess just along those same lines, since you do spend most of your time in Africa, as you say, any thoughts about just either generally, or there's also kind of a recent story about this, but just generally the idea of recently there's been a kind of move to import, you know, some African elephants into the Wild Animal Park, sort of a counterpart to the San Diego Zoo and another zoo, I think, in Florida, I guess just to sort of, you know, restock, for lack of a better term, newer, younger elephants to apparently replenish, you know, replace, I guess, even the older ones that have been there. So what's your view just generally, Ralph, about just the idea of you know, taking African elephants from Africa and bringing them into a zoo?
Boy, that's a deep subject.
Yeah.
In the world today, sometimes if you leave them in their natural habitat, it's more dangerous for the animal.
Mm-hmm.
Due to poachers and what have you.
Sure.
If you bring them into society, it can be dangerous in other ways. And
sure.
So I've always looked at it as to the type of animal that they're trying to do that with.
Yeah.
African elephants, there's really quite a few of them, and their breeding programs are good. And I think if they want to bring some over, I personally don't see a problem with that.
Okay.
Even though there's a lot of poachers, there's still, I think, 500,000 elephants in Africa alone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you said that about Indian elephants, that's a little different story. There are really no wild Indian elephants anymore. If you go up to Tiger Tops in a few places, yes, they're in those reserves, but that's not what I call wild.
Mm-hmm.
There was a major roundup a number of years ago, and so those elephants are still endangered. Their breeding programs are not well controlled, and I would say bring an Indian elephant in, I probably have second thoughts on that.
I see.
There just aren't that many.
Sure. Just the difference, really, in the population and the pool that people would be pulling from.
Exactly.
I gotcha. All right, Ralph. Well, gosh, I know you're sort of busily preparing for your next long trip to Africa, but I hope when you return that maybe you can return to the Talking Animals show and fill us in on these latest safaris with the gorillas and some of the other things that you've been doing in that time.
I'll be happy to do that. Good talking to you.
All right.
Join us over in Africa one of these days.
I hope to. I'd love to. Okay. All right, Ralph. Thanks so much for your time.
You bet.
Bye-bye now. All right, that was Ralph Helfer, interviewed Friday night just before he took off for Africa for another long trek of multiple safaris and other adventures. But I want to remind you that, as always, all the views and opinions expressed by hosts, guests, and others here on KUCI are not necessarily the views and opinions of KUCI, UCI, or the UC Board of Regents. So we are nearing the end of the first edition of Talking Animals. I'm just going to save a couple of the little treats and features that we had lined up for today and just hold those over for next week. But I do want to let you know that, in addition to the folks like Ralph Helfer that we had, other kinds of guests you might expect in the coming weeks. So we're always going to go for sort of a lively mixture of local folks, including, vets and others that are nearby. And on Thursday, I met a guy at the Orange County Red Cross who teaches pet first aid and CPR. So we'll try to include like that. But also nationally and internationally recognized experts and comedians, actors, athletes, and others who identify with animals' causes. So topics might range. By the way, another guy that popped up recently that will be hopefully a guest at some point is Greg Ginn, the Black Flag guitarist and leader and head of the fabled SST label that was home to Sonic Youth and Husker Du, the Minute Man, the Meat Puppet, so many others, has recently agreed to do a series of Black Flag reunion concerts with the understanding that each show is a benefit for homeless cat rescue programs. So you never know who might pop up on Talking Animals, and I'm going to cover an array of topics, and it might just be basic puppy training, examining the vivisection debate, pros and cons of using animals in circuses, pet effects on the health of senior citizens, whole area of animal espionage, where PETA spies on groups like Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus, and vice versa. What else? Dog-friendly restaurants and hotels, feral cats and how to adopt them, tropical fish and aquarium care, horse riding programs designed to help people with disabilities. Well, the possibilities are really are endless, but we're just about at the end of our time, as I mentioned, so I want to thank you all for listening. Hope you'll join me again next week, and I want to urge you to email me with any comments, guest suggestions, ideas about show topics, songs, comedy bits, anything else you'd like to pass along to talkinganimals@aol.com. I look forward to hearing from you. We're going to close out the show with brand new music from a band called The Eels. Of course, it's sort of an animal-related band name, and this is an animal-related tune, and chose it not only because they have a new album out called Shoot Nanny, no less, and it's a good album to boot, but also because they're playing in Orange County Wednesday night at the Galaxy Theater, mere minutes away from the KUCI studios. So I want you to stay tuned for The Blues Disease with Jeff Scott, coming right up shortly on KUCI, and meanwhile, we're going to hear new music from The Eels. It's Talking Animals on KUCI, 88.9 FM. And hope to join us next week on Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, music now from The Eel.
I am alone. I am alone.